genuinely don't know how you juggle two businesses and be so far away from home and business at the same time and start up this thing. It's really impressive.
Yeah. When there's a will, there's a way. You know, I'm hard working. I'm really tough working, and I have to pinch myself to stop at night. There's always some cleaning to do. There's always something to do there because we also have events in the restaurant, and you have to plan all the events and contact performers and people. I love it. It's not even work. It's your life. That's the process, you know. And I love it. If I don't do it, and then it's like I'm not exist. There's not a day, you know. As a chef, your biggest reward is people testing your food and liking it, or giving you honest feedback and things that, you know, that little moment where people are enjoying the food. That's what you're doing it for.
Welcome to Screw It, Just Do It, the number one ranked entrepreneurship podcast for business owners, entrepreneurs, and those aspiring to be so. The aim of this show is to showcase the world's most inspiring and interesting people who've decided to screw it, just do it. We offer 20% inspiration and 80% education, giving you the tools and advice to start, grow, and scale a successful business. I'm your host, Alex Chisnell, fellow entrepreneur, podcast agency owner with a number one podcast, and startup advisor to Global Startup Generator and early stage VC, Antler. Each week, I release two episodes, a Q&A every Wednesday with one of the world's most inspiring figures, plus a solo episode every Saturday where I cover the challenges that all of us are facing as entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 168 of Screw It, Just Do It. I'm your host, Alex Chisnell. And on today's show, I bring you an episode with a difference. Now, normally Saturdays is a solo episode from yours truly. So a bit of background. Back at the beginning of the summer, we hosted a live episode launching Jimmy's Iced Coffee's brand new product, which was a flat white in a can. We had the whole Jimmy's crew there, including founders Jim Cregan and Susie Owen, plus myself and a live audience. We also ran a competition to win a mentoring session with Jim, myself, and Virgin Startup mentor Russ Taplin from Thoughtful Business. That's correct. Thoughtful Business. The winner was Jean-Daniel Francois, professional chef, entrepreneur, also owns the Grill Shack and Tiki Bars in Bournemouth and London, and recently launched his Caribbean Magic range of sauces. Also, a husband and a very busy father. Now, his passion is cooking and serving what he produces to his customers and getting their feedback. So, it was great to dig beneath the surface and find out what his biggest challenges were and work through them with Jim, who's got a decade as an entrepreneur in the food and beverage sector, plus Russ, Virgin Startup mentor and business owner himself, who's helped many business owners over the years. So I thought this would be relevant no matter what sector you're in, really. In a number of topics that we explored, including challenges he's got with a physical premise, virtual, a product and which he can sell online, the balance he's got between family and work, launching a new product on top of an existing business, many things that we can all relate to. Before we dive in, a quick note that we've just released a limited number of half-day tickets to this year's Entrepreneur Summit on October the 17th in Bournemouth. You can either go to my partner's site, which is sunnybirdpr.com/summit2019, or go to the Screw It, Just Do It Facebook page. But yes, we've launched half-day tickets for those of you who are time or cash poor, or both. The only challenge is in picking which session you want to come to, the morning or the afternoon, of course. So the choice is yours. Back to this episode. Okay, so we discussed a number of things. We discussed productizing or bottling your USP, the move to plastic free, and family work-life balance. Now, if you like this episode and think we should do more of them, i.e. the format, a mentoring session, taking somebody who's an entrepreneur and digging beneath the surface, finding out what their challenges, what their aspirations were, and seeing whether we can help them and unravel that and work things through, then let me know. It's at Alex Chisnell on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. It's at Alexander Chisnell on Instagram. So let me know. We'd love to know what you think. And there's always the review and rate the show on iTunes, Apple Music as well. We're on 96. We'd love to get that to 100 this month. So please help us out. So without further ado, let's start up. So Daniel, first of all, we are here at Jimmy's Iced Coffee HQ in Christchurch, in Dorset. And Daniel, your business, tell us a little bit about that, where you are. Now you've got two locations and you've also got a product.
Yes, we do. Opened back in 2016, I think 3 years now since we opened the first restaurants. It's a Haitian influence, Haitian Caribbean restaurant. First of its kind in the UK. Our food is similar to Caribbean, but I would say finer version of Caribbean food, if the Jamaican agree with me.
Have you chatted to Levi about that?
I will do. I will do. I've just heard his restaurant's closed down, so...
I know.
It's not...
I heard that as well. Is that the one in Brighton? He's got one in London, isn't he? A restaurant, as he calls it, which I love.
The one in London, yeah. The one in London.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Ah, no.
So we were very successful restaurants. We have two locations. That's our third location. The second one, with license issue, we had to close. And we're open in London now. For 3 months, we've been open in London.
Yeah.
And it's been going great, picking up slowly. But the reason we're so successful as a Caribbean restaurant, different to other Caribbean restaurants, is the way I do things. And I'm from Haiti, and we cook, I would say classic French, but with the Caribbean flavors and twist. I live in Dominican Republic. They have different cookery methods to the Caribbean as well. When I come here, I cook with a lot of Jamaican, my Jamaican friends, which I know a lot about Jamaican food. And I study at Bournemouth Poole College. That was classic French kitchen. So combined everything together to create a good menu, Caribbean, but still have balance for European palates, if you know what I mean.
And where did the inspiration come then for you to decide to productize what you got? Is that from the menu that you've had?
Yeah, it's from the menu. So every week you have hundreds of people coming and they can't figure out how good is the food and where, what are you doing and who are you and where you come from? This is not Caribbean. You say, yes, it's Caribbean. He says, this is so much different. And or I eat jerk chicken, or I eat this, is so much better. And I thought, maybe we have something there. And our sauces and seasonings are the main, if you know what I mean. We just received some flat white, which is amazing, always good.
Yeah, in fact, some nice ice cold flat white.
Ice cold, Jimmy's ice cold, yeah. So.
There you go.
The essence and the fundamental of my kitchen with my sauces and seasoning, that's what make the food so good.
Yeah.
And we say if everybody who comes to the restaurants loves it, maybe there's a bigger audience that loves it. And we all know how difficult it is to scale up restaurants or to open loads of restaurants. Mm. And we thought maybe the best way to scale up that flavors is to invent a product and
to literally bottle it.
If you can bottle this. Yeah.
People keep saying, they say Caribbean, but it's kind of magic. People say it's magic. So we call it Caribbean magic. And then we get sources, the seasoning. It's basically try to get everyone jump on board, and you have a product where you can buy in the supermarket, put in your food, meat, vegetables, anything, put in the oven and barbecue, and it tastes great. Which I don't think there is a product like that in the market where you can go and grab it and you're safe to eat it. It tastes great.
And how long from idea? I'll ask Jimmy the same question. From having an idea to then actually physically getting it where somebody can buy it.
Take me a bit more time than I anticipate, because obviously I'm busy with the restaurants every day. I'm a chef there as well. I don't just turn up and go. I have to work there as well. As a small business, we can't have loads of stuff. So it take me about 7 months. The idea to have a physical product. We met some guys in Portsmouth and they said they could do the whole process of get a sample ready, manufacture it. It take about four weeks to get a good balance flavor.
And they're literally just in Portsmouth and in Bournemouth.
I'm in Bournemouth,
so. And London, so. Okay, wow, that's convenient then. And is this, you're still with them?
Yeah, we're still with them now. They're not a big company, but they for what I need, we don't have a lot of stockies. Not a lot of stockies. So I think once the business moved up to another level, then we'd have to look as well or do our own factories, basically.
Yeah.
Ideally, it's doing our own factories because they put markup on the product.
Mm.
So we very restricted on price, how much we can sell it, because we don't make it. To begin with, at the restaurant, it's the same product, but we used to make it in big quantities and keep it in the cold room to cook. We still do that now. We only do about 300 liter bagels. So that's what we can handle now. Hopefully this year or next year, we've got bigger guys on board and try to get it bigger.
Jim, remind me, where's your supplier? Who manufactures?
I can't tell you that.
Oh, God, shit, sorry.
No, we're made in Shepton Mallet.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
About a million miles away again.
No, about an hour and a half. So it's a pain to get to.
Yeah.
Because it's just wiggly, windy.
It's all A roads, isn't it? Yeah.
But it's great. We've been with them since day one.
And they've done the new flat white as well?
The new flat white is actually manufactured in Germany.
That's right.
Because we can't find a can manufacturer in the UK that does dairy. And this is the only one. You'd kind of imagine that there are heaps of them. But
the market is going that way anyway.
But they just aren't. We want to do our move to plastic free by the end of next year. And this is, the first step towards it. So
it's
cool.
Yeah. So tell us, what's the biggest challenge you've had then, or what challenges are you experiencing at the moment that can maybe talk through with you? So you've got the product to market. You've just opened a second restaurant.
Yeah.
So you're doing a lot. You've got a family.
Yes, that's probably biggest job of everything.
Yeah, exactly. 100%.
Two kids. It's big. I think the what is the most challenging is you can't go talk to the big manufacturers because they want huge numbers. You don't have enough stockies, so you're kind of stuck with the smaller guys, which charge you a lot to produce it. It's either way, for me, it's either way, give up the whole restaurants, everything, and do a little factory like they do and manufacture the thing myself. Or obviously you'll be in a bigger shop, bigger chain, or much more shops or selling it online everywhere we can do and get a bigger batch done. Because the big guys, they will ask you for 60,000, 100,000 jars, which that would take me 2-3 years to sell if you're not in Tesco's, Asda, So that's a bigger challenge. So you can't, and then again, you go talk to someone, they say, how much can you produce as well? It's like a rat race. So you need to have the demand first, and then you can't produce it without having the demand.
But you've got to produce it to get the demand, and it's just that chicken and egg all day long, isn't it?
So they charge us, the manufacturer with it now, they charge us quite a lot to produce it. We do it at the moment because we need a physical product going around and showing and but it's not where we want to be next year or next couple of years, at least.
Yeah. What sort of quantities did you start with, Jimmy's?
We were doing about 5,000 litres at a time, which, because we were in 500 mil cartons back then, so that would have been 10,000 carton runs.
Yeah.
Which was a lot considering we were chilled at the time. So we only had a 60-day shelf life, and you just had to try and get rid of it as quickly as humanly possible.
Mm.
And we ended up having, we threw away a lot of stock at one point when we made 1 litre iced coffee. We just thought everyone was going to be really into it, and they just weren't.
Mm.
It was a big purchase for something for someone who'd never tried it before. So chucking away stock was the worst. But, you know, we tried to sample as much product as we possibly could. If you're running out of shelf life, no one's going to buy it. You just go and hand it out to people and tell them where they can go and get it next time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's the shelf life on yours? I can imagine considerably longer.
Yeah, 2 years.
Is it?
2 years, yeah.
And have you been doing, I was going to say, today we're looking out there and it's not summer, but every other day has been literally like another day in paradise
in
British summer this year. Do you do things like that with testing, like targeting different events and festivals just to get more brand awareness out there, get people physical product in their hands?
Yeah, we do. I do car boots, physically doing car boots. Last year I did the Notting Hill Festival.
Cool.
So we just go there and give people jars, taking pictures. Yeah. And we had an opportunity to have a band on one of the music floats. We did that. So last year the summer was quite good. We need to do more. You can always do more as well. Mm. But with the restaurants, you kind of think, is the restaurant holding? But the restaurant is a part of the story, and it's balancing everything. So we this year, for the rest of the year, I've been concentrating a lot. And because the sauce is much more scalable, the flavors and the whole idea can reach much more customers much quicker than restaurants.
So you're clearly torn between keeping the restaurants
going all in on the sauces. Yeah. And when we were doing this, so when I was gonna go do the website for the sauces, and we had a great opportunity to buy an amazing website, and I put the sauces in there, but there's a big opportunity to open a nice e-commerce website as well for Caribbean sauces. CaribbeanSauces.com. That's for us. CaribbeanSauces.com. There's thousands of people typing Caribbean sauces on Google every day, and we have CaribbeanSauces.com.
That's cool.
That's for us, yeah.
How long have you had that?
Nearly a year now.
Okay.
But if you go there, it's just going to be Caribbean Magic as a page.
It's a holding page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Steve Media, what's it called? Josh Company.
They did the website, yeah. Steve Crawford. Yeah. Okay.
They did the website for me.
Mm.
So I'm juggling along, as you say, whether because the restaurant is very time consuming.
Yeah.
And
you're there how many hours a day, like physically yourself?
You don't count. You have sometimes kids and then you go to work and then you sleep. You have sometimes your kids, you go to work, you sleep. It's
a family up in London, or are they down here?
They're down here. Yeah, my wife from Bournemouth.
So do you sleep up in London, or do you come home each day?
No, I go to London twice a week.
Okay.
So I've got a partner in London. I go there twice a week, make sure everything is good, all food good. We do 2 cooking days, and then we got people take care of that side, and then stay in Bournemouth. The funny thing about restaurants, you can be, if you look after it, it makes a bit of money. But from that, making some money, if you don't look after it, it can be losing money.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It can be in just a couple of weeks a month.
Yeah.
The whole thing went down. So, and if you want to open chains of restaurants, obviously you need very good systems, and that's cost a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
You want the best locations, that's cost a lot of money. and you have to have a big name to have the best locations and so on. It's a whole complicated thing.
Mm. What are your thoughts, Russ?
Well, I've got a couple of questions just about the idea and getting it to market and wanting to know, you obviously had the sauce and it's magic and it's a recipe that you own. Did you have to change that to get it to market when you actually created the product you put on the shelf, or is it still the same?
Quite the same. That was the most challenging thing, is to do it in a way, not for everybody, but for as much people as possible to enjoy it. And there's some products, I remember I met with Pizzlini last year, and one of the ingredients we had for colouring have an e-number on it. Mm. And he said, you just can't have a product come up on the market now with e-numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
It have to be completely clean.
Yeah.
He say, if you was here 20 years ago, then you're there, you have your customer base and everybody, you just the culture.
Mm.
But if you're coming out now as a new product, it's so much, so much harder if you know, if you're not clean, completely clean. So we just go back and everything now, it's and the sauce, everything is clean, it's healthy.
So you took you that can out. Have,
yeah,
we took that out. It, yeah.
Yeah, we replaced it.
Thank you, Piers.
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
Yeah. We're seeing you next so, week.
so we go back and completely make it. Enjoyable for everyone, whether you're vegan or vegetarian, and you eat meat, it's good on meat, good on vegetables. So obviously we get ready for some good barbecue later as well.
And so the other question, I guess, is that loop between, you need the finance to manufacture, you need to manufacture to create the demand, you need the demand to get the finance. And I wondered, to what extent are you wed to actually being the manufacturer and yourself, or would you consider going to someone larger, say, that took the financial risk, took the manufacturing risk, but you effectively licensed the product to them as a way of getting the product on the shelves?
Good
so
question.
So I was thinking, how wedded to you are you? Or is it more important really for you to get your sauce and your recipe out there?
I'm kind of anyhow I can get my cooking to as much people as possible, I'm open for it. Anyhow, whether to license. The idea is to people to recognize my kitchen, and obviously I would love to do cooking shows. I'll do a few shows Pure World, I do in the restaurant as well. If I find a manufacturer who can license it, sell it out, I think the product, we have a product, we have a little brand, I'll be well open for that, definitely. As soon as they can get it to as much people as possible and they respect the product value as well, that's important. So we're well open. We're well open for that.
Oh, cool.
And anything else on that, Russ? What would your kind of first steps be if he was? I'm assuming you haven't considered that yet.
Yeah, no, I do see this quite a lot, and I've been caught in that loop myself, where you know that you need the finance to do something, but you need to prove that demand, and actually. Albeit the bit that I was looking at, the volumes were so great, it ruled it out anyway. But it took a long time, personally, to come to terms with the fact that you're actually going to have to go to somebody to sell your idea, look for a partnership, work with them, then look for a licensing arrangement to get something off the ground. But now I've come to terms with that myself, I see it as a way of being able to unlock that for people that are in the same sort of situation. But it depends how much of it you want to own, and that I think Jimmy, earlier on in the conversation you mentioned about having control over something and when you do and don't let that go. I think that this is actually kind of, you have the idea, you have that excitement, but then actually you have to let go of the control fairly early on as well to come to terms with the fact that you just can't do it, you need somebody's help.
I mean, it's, I would just say it's much quicker, and it's, and in a way, if you want your product to explode, it's much more effective way to get those people in the ground who already have all the money, all the contacts and everything, I'm well off for that. My dream is to see my recipes, my product enjoyed by millions, and you go in somewhere you didn't expect to see your product and it's there, and people's buying it, they're enjoying it. I think there isn't any product in the market who's as good as mine, as healthy as mine, and quite frankly, if I see any product in the market was anywhere as good as mine, I probably wouldn't do it. Mm. Literally, I probably do something else. But I remember 2010 when I first come to the UK. You go everywhere, you just can't find a product.
Mm.
You put it in your food and it tastes great and it's healthy and it's good for you. There isn't. It's just there isn't. I don't know why, but some, we don't want to mention names, have product. They do sell millions, but only because there isn't Caribbean Magic on the market yet. I think once we're in the market,
You started it because you didn't find anything on the market. Is that right?
Yeah. I just had my amazing fix down under, and then coming home and not being able to get my amazing fix. So I was like, right, I'll just have to make my own one then. Just being selfish, just to want to drink your own stuff.
Mm.
But then, as you say, you want to see millions of people enjoying the product, and that's the biggest thing for us, is seeing strangers just happily picking up a nice coffee off the shelf and just drinking it like they've done it for all of their lives. And you're
it's
like,
this is the
coolest thing ever.
Best feeling in the world.
It's gotta be.
Yeah, because there's a lot of choice out there. When they pick your one, you're like, that's really, we've done the right job for them to enjoy it.
In a way, you're probably in the situation now where you see like Costa Coffee bringing out a product, Starbucks have got a product, but they haven't been around for a very long time.
Starbucks has been around for longer than we have. There were three players in the market when we launched, and there must be probably 8 to 10 now, quite heavyweight.
Okay.
But then there's a lot of startup kind of cold brew companies and things who are all experimenting with different flavors and styles.
Yeah.
But it's a big, we're now, like, if we turn around and look behind us, there's a big wave of people coming in with big wallets.
Mm.
That doesn't necessarily mean say they can barge into supermarkets like they used to, because companies used to be able to buy their way in, and that obviously isn't allowed anymore. So they kind of have to wait in the queue. And also the product has to be great, and I'm really glad that we got in early, because I think if we tried now it would be really, really hard. So you might find that you're in a similar situation where there's just no decent, or there is either no Caribbean kind of cooking jars, or there are but they're not all that great, and then you'll just be able to get to that top spot pretty quick. But then when people catch on that there are millions of people enjoying it, they're either going to buy you or try and eat you up for breakfast, but you just have to fight them.
I think you, if you're the best and you try to better yourself, and then no one will be able to catch you. I think our product is great, and we have good feedback from the brand as well, name and everything.
Have you thought of personalising it? I was just out of interest. I'm just like standing, sat here staring at your logo and thinking, if you thought when you see like Jimmy's Iced Coffee and got you here in your hat and your love your attire, so and I just thought, there's the picture, isn't it?
Yeah.
To put on the jar.
We do have pictures in the jar, but not with the hat. I didn't mean the hat by that.
You need one of those like big circular logos with your like face in the middle of it, wearing that hat with a big smile, just like. Daniel's recipe.
Yeah, you got a great smile as well.
That's a great idea.
And what would your thoughts, Jim, be on conundrum that he's facing at the moment? Clearly he's the only one who can make the decision, but
I get asked that question a lot by people who are in early stage of business. It is literally the chicken and the egg.
Mm.
About, you know, you can make up a few jars in your kitchen, then you go and try and find someone to make it for you when you get a little bit better or a little bit bigger and the demand is there, and then there's that, just the tipping point where something where something clicks and you're like, ah, okay. You take a big order to a manufacturer and you go, I finally got my order of a couple of pallets of stock or whatever it is. But it's no overnight kind of thing.
There's not a recipe, I mean, like Jim's gone, here's the answer.
Yeah, it's just relentless hard work. I mean, I don't know how you juggle, genuinely, I don't know how you juggle two businesses and be so far away from home and business at the same time and start up this thing. It's really impressive.
Yeah. When there's a will, there's a way. You know, I'm hard working. I'm really tough working, and I have to pinch myself to stop at night. There's always some cleaning to do. There's always something to do there because we also have events in the restaurant, and you have to plan all the events and contact performers and people. I love it. It's not even work. It's your life. That's the process, you know. I love it. If I don't do it, and then it's like I'm not exist. There's not a day, you know. As a chef, your biggest reward is people testing your food and liking it, or giving you honest feedback and things that, you know, that little moment where people are enjoying the food. That's what you're doing it for.
And do you think, just like kind of separating the bits, would you say your passion is the cooking still?
Cooking in restaurant is two different things.
That's what I'm trying to separate.
One's cooking and one's business, isn't it?
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to separate. Like, if you see the scalability and giving you the life that you want for you and your family through the power of productizing that with the jars, but you can keep your passion. Like, you could still be doing cooking demonstrations. You could be on TV shows doing that. You could be on stage at the NEC doing that, you know. You could be on podcasts talking about this, like Mr. Leave Our Roots. But if you could then move away from that, which it seems incredible, you just look at what happened to Jamie Oliver and his old chain of restaurants, you know. If you separate yourself from that, is that still something that appeals to you?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking hard about it. The restaurant has business. It's a lifestyle, but the time is sucking away from you if you don't have a good system in there. And because our food is so authentic, there's certain thing you can't do, and I'm that kind of chef. It's not like I throw something away before I throw something in the plate and hopefully someone like it. I have to know it tastes great, and if every time I'm not there, it's a constant worry, and that's like what people think of your food, and it's your restaurant, and people, we should pay money for something. You want it to be good. And if someone, I always say, if someone have a shower, leave their home, come to your house, the restaurant is actually your venue, and then they don't enjoy themselves, it's a crime. That should never happen.
Do you spend your time poring over... it's not TripAdvisor, is it? We get all the reviews. Obviously, like Mark Cribb, who we all know in this room, owns a bunch of restaurants in Bournemouth, and every week he'll put out a series answers he's given. And it's like, don't even look at them.
It's the worst time of your life, isn't it? When you see a one-star review. We don't have a lot of them. I think out of all three restaurants, I think we have over 3 years, I think we have six. And it's how they reviews, if they explain it, is great. That's why I say people, if there's something happen, you're gonna have one star. If you're gonna give it one star, if you need to explain why.
Yeah. And sometimes don't just do one star. Yeah. You've got to explain.
Because people can say, okay, I will sit down and I don't know, there was a shouting guest next to me, I didn't enjoy myself, and the food take too long, and then we will know. But when the food wasn't great, that's
when
you may as well kill me. So that's the kind of thing.
Reviews can be really fickle though, can't they? Because it could be the guy, you know, next door who wants to steal your business and is just getting his mates to write reviews about how poor quality stuff is. It's a whole thing about like even winning awards, and like, oh, we've just won an award. Well, who's giving you the award? Oh, those guys. Who are they? That's him and her. And you're like, well, what do they do? What the hell do they know about what's going on? Like, well, why should their like actual? It doesn't matter who they are. If you're proud of what you do, don't go chasing awards and stuff. I remember getting an email from a lady saying, "Jim, I can help you win awards. Like, I'm a professional award winner. Like, I'm actually good at getting awards." And you're like,
"Oh my god."
Oh, you are you've just gone down the completely wrong path. Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense. Sorry, I've just gone a complete tangent.
You see people, don't they? They're just chasing awards all the time, and it's the same people. They'll just like do a chain, or next year you win this category, this year I'll win this category, and they just keep switching them around.
You see their email footer, and there's like 27 different awards at the bottom, and you're like, bravo.
It's funny you say that, because I have at least, I don't know, maybe at least 10 emails what people can get me in certain awards. And,
really?
And you think like, I need to get down and work hard. And people thinking about winning awards.
Yeah. I used to be a food, I did a food judging thing once for a publication. And you go there and you spend the entire day judging food, from like cooked sausages to ready meals to like everything. By the end of the day, you're literally just like, yeah, great, 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 not bad. And, you know, the attention is gone.
Not bad.
And that just happens everywhere. If you've got a cold, you might be in a bad mood. You're not interested in trying sausages today. And yet that's going to determine whether you've suddenly won the award or not. It's just like, no thanks.
Yeah. What do you do when you don't win in next year, because the next scale-up that's coming in has then taken your spot and written a better submission? Then does that mean you're shit? Does that mean you're good? I mean, it's a self-perpetuating issue, and I've shied away from that.
I don't use TripAdvisor or anything like that, because I just want to. It's like saying the film's rubbish. It's like, well, you might think it's rubbish. I think Point Break is the best movie of all time. So I'm going to go and watch it. Thanks very much.
I also think that people are doing research on you, and customers are really genuinely quite intelligent. And I think they see past those things too.
Yeah.
Actually, I think most people, when you see how intelligent they are when they are making comments, kind of know what the real situation is. And so they just evaluate based on, you know, these guys are good, I've heard of them, I like the price, I like the product, I've tried it, I know someone else that's tried it. Not the awards and not the reviews, if you're honest.
Totally.
One thing I think they should never do is judging art, because you may like an art and I don't, and everybody have different things.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've been an artist for a long time.
Mm.
And you see people who say, oh, this one is nice and this one don't. It's like, what are you saying? Yeah. You like that one, you don't like that one. That's fine. But you can't say this one is not nice or...
It's just different.
It's just different. Yeah. Different interpretation. Yeah.
It's just not for me. Yeah. Thank you very much. As opposed to that's disgusting. So there.
Yeah. I got a question for you to kind of draw things to a close. Is what does the boss think then? What does she think? What's her opinion? And where do you draw the line when you come from work?
That's a really good question.
I'm going to put you in trouble. Spot, yeah.
Maybe we'll edit this out. Maybe we won't.
She's... for some reason, she think if for some reason she think if I she hates the restaurants. She hates it because it takes too much time away.
Yeah, true.
I because I'm a relaxed person, I never get stressed.
You're relaxed.
Yeah, never get stressed. So I'm more like a stoic guy. I always think, if there's an event coming in your life, I would say if your life is a series of events and there's two categories, some you can control, some you can't control. And if you can't control, you may as well not stress about it. If you can control it, don't stress about it, just act. So there's not a reason.
I need that as a little sentence on the wall somewhere.
Set that away. Yeah, yeah, I like that. Stoicism so like that, yeah.
She hates the restaurant. So she, for some reason, she's saying, if I do the product and the cooking, I would have more time at home. I don't think so.
I think the decision has been made for you.
Yes.
Let's see what happened. But I'm so up to see this product as much places as possible, and as much people enjoying it as possible. Whether it's to quit the restaurants, whether it's to have cooking shows and open it. We see if we can get an e-commerce platform where we can do all the sources and everything. That's another project. If I would leave the restaurants, but I think she's much prefer if I do the product.
Yeah.
Okay, so as I said earlier, I hope you enjoyed that different format, different from my usual meanderings on a Saturday where it's just me talking. Do let me know. Love your feedback. So many people contact me, especially through LinkedIn, where it's at Alex Chisnell, and also more so Instagram, as I'm getting more involved with Instagram, finding out more about what you can and can't do with the stories on there, which I really like. It's at Alexander Chisnell. To just let me know, or let us know via a review on iTunes/Apple Music. As I said, we're up to 96. We'd love to get that to 100. So let us know what you think of this new format, and we'll do more of them, more of these mentoring sessions. We'll run some competitions, get some winners, get you in with some pretty cool people like Jim, for example, to work through. We've done one before with Piers Linney as well. So well up for doing more of that. Couple of things just to flag and just mention, productizing and bottling your USP. Now, wouldn't that be a cool thing? What is it that you've got that you could bottle and sell? What's your USP? What marks you out from anybody else that's doing what you do, for example? Why do you do it differently? You know, Jean-Francois put all of his heart and soul, his blood, sweat and tears, and put it in a bottle that people can eat. Maybe you don't want to eat his blood, sweat and tears, but you know what I'm saying. And it's delicious, by the way. I've cooked with it on a number of different occasions, made some Caribbean chicken dishes myself. So he's really captured that in his Caribbean magic. Also talked about the move to plastic free when we launched Jimmy's Iced Coffee to their can, they're flat white in a can. Obviously, it's a wave. It's been unbelievable, hasn't it, really? What you can do when you get public opinion behind you and you get people, big players, changing the way they do business, the retailers. So if you haven't already made that move, I think it's a matter of when, not if, or you're going to be left behind. And I do get you can't just do it instantaneously if you've got agreements with producers, etc. And lastly, something we talked about a lot in this, work-life balance. There's going to be a number of people listening to the show, maybe it's you, who have already got a business or you're in a job and you're looking to start a business. So you're trying to balance that two things, your side hustle perhaps, and you've also got other commitments. You could be studying for something, or it could be family, like Jean-Francois here, like Jim, like Russ, myself, we've all got children. It is a challenge, and we've got partners, which most of you are going to have, I'm assuming, as well. So it's a challenge with your time, spreading yourself too thin. And I totally relate to what Jean-Francois was saying, when there's always something else to do. You know, is it cleaning up in the restaurant? Is it posting something on social to promote a new product or an event? There's got to be a line where you come home and you switch off, or otherwise we'd all be going nonstop. So have a think about that. As I say, if you like this episode, let me know. We'll do more of them. We'd love to know what you think. If you found value in this free podcast, all I ask is that you tell somebody else about it. You don't have to leave a review or write a post on social tagging me in the Screw It, Just Do It hashtag. But if you do, I promise to give you a shout out on a future episode, and you have my eternal thanks. I'm at Alex Chisnell on LinkedIn, Twitter and Facebook, plus at Alexander Chisnell on Instagram. Alongside the Screw It, Just Do It Facebook page, this houses the Screw It, Just Do It community and has the most up-to-date information on all things Screw It, Just Do It, including all of our live events. I love hearing from you if you either message me on LinkedIn or email alex@screwitjustdoit.org. I promise to reply. Just give me a little time.